Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Robots and Red Tape. As always, I am your host, Nick Shutt. Happy to have my friend Derry Gober dancing here with me today. How are you, Derry?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Man, it's another day in paradise. Thanks so much for asking. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on today. I'm very excited to talk today about something that is near and dear to both of our hearts, which is how you go about actually learning things that you can then apply to seemingly abstract and random situations to end up building really cool stuff. So, Derry, for the folks that don't have the opportunity to know you yet, do you mind telling everybody like a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got here?
Sure. So from a how I got here, it's gonna a long, winding, crazy road of how I got here today. But that said, my background is extremely varied. I have some could say I have a background in technology. Some would say I have a background in acquisition. Some would say I have a background in just management consulting or business development, and that kind of delves a little bit into the conversation of learning and how do you kind of get there. But I have an extremely wide variety in my background. I've done just about everything that I think of from a corporate ladder perspective, from stacking the shelves and doing logistics for one customer, to pulling wires and doing things to writing wonderful papers that eventually became law. So that's kind of a pretty wide variety. And somehow along the way, someone gave me a wonderful task of and challenge going, hey, there's this new thing called AI. Why don't you get involved in it and see if you can solve this problem that you're trying to get involved in AI? And so I did. And I did. And got on the AI bandwagon about 11 years ago or so,
Before it
and
got cool.
started, before it got cold, before all the GPUs started showing up and everyone has one and can run, their local LLM on their desktop or their MacBook right now. So yeah, you definitely got into the AI space well before it, and it's kind of cool solving all of those things all at once. I've got a kind of pretty wide background in just about multiple splits.
Absolutely. But you've also, in addition to that, you've built hardware as well, and in a correct in
That's
your
correct. That's correct. Yeah. So, I was part of a, I had another company, and one of the things we did was we manufactured cameras. And these cameras were able to go on to drones, helicopters, remote vehicles. You can attach them, literally just take it and just stick it on top. It had an extremely powerful magnet, and they were well-connected IoT devices. You can see across the globe. So we had them deployed all across the globe. And the coolest thing about managing all of it is we eventually built it out to the point where we had one person managing like a fleet of them across the entire globe. And we built all these models and automation to the level of one a couple of clicks and you just fix everything.
Really crazy.
We from a manufacturing perspective, doing actual hardware, building out things, got into stuff with radio frequencies and understanding how the electromagnetic spectrum and looking down from space and learning how satellites actually work and how they don't work. And recognizing that a fun, cool fact that you, as much as you hear about all your GPUs and it's like, yeah, just launch a NVIDIA GPU, what is it, 5090 or whatever it is into space. Yeah, that's not a thing. You can't just do that. You can't launch that payload. You got to factor in radiation from the sun. There's all these real world sciences that get applied. So I got a little crash course for like a year and a half in like real world science along the way with the technical side of things.
That's really cool, man. But you're also like an expert in blockchain, correct?
I am. I am. As you said, once again, got into some blockchain stuff well before it was cool in the buzzword. I started a long time ago just exploring this thing called blockchain and Bitcoin and Ethereum. And trying to understand it, I had this really interesting question that I posed. Why can't we figure out who's making transactions? Why can't you figure out patterns and do pattern analysis and understand what's actually happening in the space? We actually So I challenged a couple of folks and they said, oh, it can't be done. And I said, all right, well, I'll take that challenge. Let's actually see if we can figure some things out. And while you can't personally identify someone, you can absolutely get to the point where you can understand patterns and do pattern analysis of that, and understanding how the intricacies of the crypto itself and the math that goes into that process and how encryption works, getting involved into that deep analysis was actually a pretty interesting foray that has led us to some work that we have done for some customers across the federal government in leveraging our blockchain experience to being able to build out some data analysis and analytics around it.
That's really cool, man. That's fantastic. So you've done data, hardware, data analysis, blockchain, hardware, building physical things. You pulled cables. You've touched pretty much every layer of that seven layer OS.
And I will say one slight claim to fame that it's probably silent. I fixed a bug in a Sam in Samsung phones that was published globally.
Really? That's cool. Well, can you tell me what the bug was?
I cannot disclose more than
Okay.
that
Yeah,
statement.
man.
So
No, that's really cool.
it was a midnight 2 a.m. I can't remember a couple of years ago, and I figured out that, hey, this thing's not working. Figured it out, spoke to some folks, and shortly thereafter there were some pushes that were made, and I was like, man, I did that. That's
Yeah.
pretty cool.
That's really, really, really cool, man. So obviously, listen, having touched all these very different areas, right? How have you been able to like learn about all these different areas first? But second, I think more importantly is how has being so varied and so broad while also being deep in so many areas helped you?
So, a couple of things. One, pure motivation. I have a desire to learn, a desire to not just better myself, but I just want to know more. I want to know more about a topic, especially if I'm challenged with, I know nothing about that thing, so now I must know everything about that thing. I also don't like showing up looking like an idiot, so in a conversation. So I want to make sure I know as much about the topic, even if it's just to be conversational. And taking a deep dive. So a lot of the reasons for having a deeper expertise in that, even if sometimes it's just to provide direction to a team member, and as I direct the teams to execute things, I have to understand it well enough to the point where I can have a discussion with them to provide the right type of leadership, because I've discovered that just because you say, I want X, not everyone can interpret between the X and the actual execution plan. So I've had to go in, pull in the manuals. Sure, YouTube works really well. Folks, I was talking to someone. They learn how to repair their entire car by, going into YouTube and learning everything about it, which is fantastic. YouTube is great. There's online things, but it's just learning to challenge yourself and a desire to want to do something new and different and understand the why. And it's the art of understanding the why to be able to drive that.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that, like, I don't think people should collect knowledge like with the hope to make money off of it. Like, I think that's a result. I think if you and like for me, I know I've fallen in love with the process of learning, right? Like, I just want to know more stuff about more stuff, and I find it fascinating. I don't go as deep as you do from a depth perspective, but at the same time, I still want to be able to talk about all these things and understand them all and have more interesting and more in-depth conversations with people. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. So how has this like positively affected your career?
I would say I wouldn't be where I am if not for that. I think had I stuck with my career wherever it was at the time, I probably may have just been a person doing some sysadmin work or some development work, or depending on the other phases of my career, I could just be doing just some basic management consulting, project management type stuff. The desire to learn and grow and this diverse set of knowledge and skills that come to the table really provides the ability for that growth that I needed The ability to support the customers across the board, and allows the customers to feel that I speak with, and the folks I speak with, to know that not only do I know what I'm talking about, but if I don't know the thing that I'm talking about, I'll tell you very much. I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no problem admitting that. And they recognize that probably the next conversation or two, I'll have spun up so much information that I can be conversant. And that diverse set of knowledge and skills allows you to be trusted more and believe what you're saying, even if you may know only 10% of the full subject.
Yeah, you don't need to know the whole thing. You just need to be one step, a couple of steps ahead, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. It's been extremely helpful across the career.
Absolutely. And so, can you give me an example of a time where you were in a project and somebody came to you with either a problem or and you were able to solve it because you knew something about something completely unrelated to what you were working on?
Yes. So we've with some of the projects that we're working on, and I probably can't name all the names of some of these folks, but with some of the projects we're working on, we're building out some data analysis work, and we had to do some intriguing things with some AI models. And as we were starting to look at what these AI models do and the way how the data operated and the way how the data behaved, I started to think about this and realized the problem space that I was looking at, if you look at it through the lens we were doing it, it's difficult to solve. So I forced the team to stop thinking that way. And I said, hang on a second. This is actually solved, and it goes back to some of the conversation working with some folks on, satellites and electromagnetic spectrum and stuff like that, where you're looking at RF frequencies and how these things operate. And I started to look at the physical sciences that were associated with that, and leveraging that knowledge and understanding of how the physical sciences operated there made us appreciate the problem in a different way. And once you started looking at the problem from a completely different lens, it applied a logic that suddenly just became easy, if you will. And nothing's ever quote unquote easy, but to me, I always say, oh, that's easy. Even though it's like the Titanic. Oh, well, yeah, it's just a small little iceberg.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a massive thing behind it. But the logic flow, it suddenly opens up the gate to going, man, this problem space changed dramatically. And once you redefine it in a way that has been solved by somebody else in a way that that you may not pay attention to, but that novel resolution isn't so challenging anymore, right? Because then you realize, one, the likelihood that you're the only person facing this problem is low. Two, there's probably a lot of information about how they solved it in their manner. So let's go look at how their approach to the problem. It's not the actual resolution of but you're looking at the approach and the steps. And I was having a conversation with some of the folks who work with me today. You look at logic, right? And you look at their logic of how they approach the things. And let's approach this problem space with that. And once we took that approach with this particular client, man, within something that we thought that was probably going to take us a couple of months to build out, we were done in a couple of days. And yielded some amazing results that sped things up for the customer. So we got like a 99% level of accuracy in our model because of it.
That's so all and you changed some information that you had, but mainly what you did was you were able to change your perspective and the view, the lens through which you viewed it. And I would assume somebody that didn't have that physical sciences experience never would have came to that same solution or looked at it that way. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, because we had assigned the project. I gave some general direction to the folks, and they because what I try to do is empower folks. I give them the information. I give them the target that we're trying to achieve. I give them any support information that I think may be necessary at the time that I can think of. But I try to give them the space by which they are allowed to grow and expand and leverage their own. We don't want to be so biased that I have influenced your decision making too much to the point where you aren't don't have the freedom to think, because innovation isn't held by one individual in the entire world. It's we all come with different things. And I always tell folks on the team, challenge me, tell me I'm wrong, tell me why you want to be right. And that's good, because I want you to, and I want to help you be successful. And so this guy was struggling a little bit, and I said, "Hang on a second. Let's take a step back. Let's review what you've got. Let's tell me where you are." And when I redirected and refocused the problem space and helped him along with that process, it significantly changed everything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And how, thinking about AI specifically, right? Obviously, is the new wave. Do you think that having access to, like a Gemini or a ChatGPT or a Claude, does that make it easier for you to learn something new?
It's not that it's necessarily easier in a whole. It may help once I get to a certain point. It may help. It'll speed up the process, because what I don't want to is folks to listen to this go. I just suddenly pull it up on insert LLM name here, and I'm now an expert. That only gets you a surface level view of things. Sometimes when you want a cursory, quick understanding. Just as a summary point, yeah, you can leverage it to help you get there. Absolutely. It is a conversation with a client recently. It's a really great Control F. And
Oh, yeah.
it does a really great job. Is there some extremely complex math that goes on the back? Absolutely. And it's amazingly complex math. And it's fantastic. And it helps you get your information a lot faster. And so why not leverage that? I would be a fool not to do that, right? Sometimes I'm looking up things that I should normally look up on, I should normally know, but I don't always remember. So, you go to Google. Well, sure, I can go to Google, then look at the 15 pages, and eventually I'll summarize the 3 or 4 salient pages and think to myself, okay, if I pull these 3 or 4 different pieces together, this is my answer. I could leverage the LLM because it, in a certain way, it does similar things, right? Leveraging those transformers to be able to get that data to you faster. It's been trained on a lot of this text already. Let's leverage it to augment the process. It doesn't supplement the process, it augments the process. And I think for folks, it's a use with caution. Don't just take it as it's at its word, because the imagination that comes with it. Sometimes I tried out, I think it was a it's a Llama 3 model, re relatively recent. I was deploying it for testing something. Actually, for my daughter, I'm building something for to help her with homework. Not to
Nice.
do her homework, but actually to give her quizzes on her homework.
Okay.
And I was leveraging it to deploy it locally just to see how it works. And I figured, why not? I'll see what else it can do. So I asked it how to clean, how to get rid of salmonella. I was listening to something and I was like, you know what? I'll just ask. I like asking random questions. How do you get rid of salmonella for chicken? It says you need to wash it and bleach or use laundry detergent. I'm going, hang on, what?
On your
This is
chicken.
on your chicken. Now, so if someone went ahead and took that advice, I would say you would sadly be mistaken. That is not the method by which you clean your meats and poultry. That's not what we should be doing. So there's a cautionary tale here. Don't just trust implicitly everything you read from it, because while it has good information, it also has some negative information that may not be the best.
It's also not wise, right? Like I think that like, I think that there's two, like intelligence and wisdom are two separate things, right? The best example I've heard, it's a very old cliche saying, but that intelligence is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing that it doesn't belong in a fruit salad.
Sorry, I haven't heard that one in a while. Yes.
Yeah, but it's like it's one of those things. But it I don't think it really has the it doesn't have the same context on reality that we do. It also doesn't. It's also not necessarily dealing with the it may have access to more facts than you do, but it doesn't
Sure.
have the ones that are in your head. And I mean, those may or may not be right to begin with. But I think it's a really interesting way to your point, do some research, right? Also, in addition to that, like if I have a very specific question, it's way better than Google, right? Way better than
Correct.
Google. at you know it like LLMs do a better job of searching the internet than Google does. I think partially that's because they haven't figured out how to monetize the answers yet. Because how long do you think it's going to be before there's like a sponsored LLM answer?
I'm sure very soon. I'm sure very soon. And in fact, the question here isn't sponsored LLM answer per se. It is going to be folks are going to want you to pay to get access to your knowledge source, right? So when you're an LLM is going out and doing searches right now, you can tie your LLM to Google for searching. You can tie it to insert, your favorite. You can do DuckDuckGo, you can do whatever it is you want from your search algorithms. You can leverage your LLM connected to those wonderful Google searches, those DuckDuckGo searches, whatever it is. Not trying to be biased here. And bring that data in. But to your point, what you're probably going to likely have is, probably not the best example, but like a LexisNexis saying, "Hey, look, I have a massive treasure trove of information." You probably want to tie that into your existing thing. They have their own stuff, but but should you want to tie our data sources into that, why don't you pay us a fee and include that into your searches, right? So there's possibly going to be some sponsored things, but what I think it's likely going to have happen is you want to tap into this more detailed information. The LLM is going to come back and say, "Hey, look, I found where you can get this. Please insert coin here for this particular data source." And would you have it set up in a I found that humans are very intriguing creatures. When you abstract money from the cash value that you physically have to some digitized tokens, you go, "Oh yeah, sure, why not? I'll spend 100 tokens for, playing this new game or adding this new source." So to your question, can I anticipate something like a sponsored type thing coming in? Yes, the method by which it eventually makes its way through that process, to be determined. But I anticipate there's some as soon as the mon someone figures out exactly how to do that monetization, it'll kick in full gear. Maybe you and I can come up and figure that out, right?
Hey man, listen,
We'll do that. We'll do our next podcast on that,
oh,
right?
absolutely. I think that's, I think like first would love to tie back conversation. I think I have some ideas, but second, I think you're absolutely 1,000% right that it's going to happen. It's just who's going to figure it out first, because like that's what we're best at. We Americans are best at is monetization and figuring out how to monetize every single thing. And if you are able to, give me $100 for gems, and then you can just spend the gems in your game, right? That's it's not really money, and you don't, unless you tie the value, like or how many gems a dollar is worth or whatever, like you're not really gonna know, and it's just not gonna care. It's that is a very interesting case. I think it's gonna be really interesting to see. I think, but also personally, the reason I like LLMs now is because it's like YouTube before there was ads on YouTube, right? It's like, it's that it feels like that, 90s and early 2000s internet that hadn't been taken completely over by corporations yet. But I also know that that's absolutely coming.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will say that, given the LLMs that are out there, like you mentioned, there's Claude, there's Gemini, there's ChatGPT. Meta puts out their own and they train it and they make it available for folks to come in and utilize. And I will say to anyone who hasn't at least attempted to use it, it's worth it, right? It does a pretty decent job for what it does. Is it the absolute best when you are losing the much lower end versions of the model? No. Oh, but that's okay. It depends on your use case. Everything has a use case, right? You're not going to, what's that thing? You don't take a sledgehammer when you can just push your take your finger and push that thumbtack in the wall or something like that, right? It's that kind of a thing. Each tool uses for a specific purpose. I leverage it for a couple of services I have built out in my corporate network, and I mean it's fantastic. It works great, and it's purpose built for what it's meant to do. And Man, it runs fantastic for that.
I'll have to check Llama out. I have not used it. I also have. I know like there's Grok also. I haven't used Grok really. I've been mainly on like the Claude, Gemini,
Yep.
ChatGPT of the world. I haven't downloaded anything from like Hugging Face and started playing with them. I feel like that's outside of my area of expertise. But I maybe you know m maybe maybe. I don't know, maybe it'll work out. Maybe I'll get into those other things. But out of curiosity, Darius, you think about like your experience having been a gen like being a deep generalist in a lot of areas, right? And then there's people that only hyper specialize in one area. How do you think that like that hyper specialization in one area, how do you think that's detrimental, especially when you look at things like AI? Or specifically at AI.
So I don't want to use the pejorative purely detrimental, so because I don't want it to come across that, we want to disparage someone, because someone who has, let's say, computational linguistics, very hyper focused in that area, there's a need for that, right? Am I hyper focused in the computational linguistics to the point where I know every single which way to implement those algorithms? Absolutely not. However, that said, when we're starting to talk about and expand that out further, let's say we're looking at other types of AI models that are out there, and we're not just talking about LLMs, because when folks hear AI today, they only think of LLMs. AI for the past several years and still will continue to be more than just that. You know, you have your unsupervised, you have your semi-supervised, then you have your full supervised. LLMs fall inside of the semi-supervised category, and within that, there are so many other categories of things and types of things that can be built. So, to your question, when you're looking at a particular space, there is the need to have those who have that extremely specialized knowledge. But when you're coming into an AI space, especially the way that I'm approaching it, and the way I like to tell folks, look at it at a broader spectrum, right? You need to have a bit of a diversity of skills and a diversity of understanding how these things work, because without that, it makes it a bit more difficult. You have such a narrow view when you're specialized. You don't know what you don't know, and you don't realize what biases you bring to the table, you as an individual. Right? You don't realize sometimes your own biases. And we're humans. We all bring our own biases. And even though I recognize that I have several, that doesn't mean my biases are gone. It just means I can at least recognize some of them. But recognizing that when you're so specialized, you're biased in your viewpoint of how you're going to approach the topic. And while your specialized skills will help you solve a specific part of that, you're going to miss out on several of the other parts that are needed, right? Recognizing that, let's take, for example, acquisition, right? In the federal government space, it's a very specialized field, and those folks are awesome. They're great at what they do, and they're highly trained in what they do, and they spend quite a bit of time. And then you pick a person who's in the computational linguistics and AI, and you say, okay, build out an acquisition bot. And they're going to, great, I'm going to build out this acquisition bot. And as they go through the process, not understanding generally how acquisitions work, you're going to miss out on some of the nuances of that process. You're going to miss out on the what else should you consider, right? You may also miss out, let's say, for example, we're talking about this on a user experience. Why would a user ask this other question? That doesn't seem to make sense. Why would they want to know only in this specific document how this thing works? Well, because from an acquisition perspective, that's something they need to know. And you need to tailor and build your responses such that, and build your bot to handle that. And so having that generalized view, sometimes, not only sometimes, a lot of times is extremely helpful. Also, as I think I mentioned before, it provides a different way of solving problems. Now, is not to distract and detract away from the fact that you still need folks who are extremely specialized. You still need that person who's going to go the, I may pick up the 10, 15, 20% of the way, but you still need someone who's got that 90, 100% because we have to solve that thing. And I can get us generally in the vicinity. Here's where we should narrow the problem. Now I need you to figure out this. Now that I've narrowed down where the problem should be and the general approach, go ahead and tackle that. That is invaluable to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, absolutely. And it like I always think of fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I think I agree with you that you need the hyper specialists, right? You need the folks that understand it to the nth degree and can sit and talk about, you know, whether it's computational linguistics or acquisition or, you know, you name it, right? There's somebody out like import export, right? There's somebody out there that's an expert in import export out of very hyper specific countries, and that's just what they know, right? Like, as you sit and look at all these things, but what I find interesting, and I think the viewpoint that I always like to bring is the like, is it actually going to work, right? And you know, and getting out of the weeds and bringing it back up to also how does it connect to everything else that it's around, right? How does the acquisition connect to the program office, right? How does it connect to the vendors and the potential vendors forward facing? How does it sit in that space? And I think unless you're, if you are, say, building a chatbot for acquisition or building a tool for acquisition, having that understanding of not just the tech, not just that program office, but the connecting offices, what they do, the systems they use, and then like talking to industry and having an idea from industry about how do they use it and what do they need, unless you're taking all of those. And I think like that's something that if you're, you know, when if I was building out a team to do something like this, I would have a couple of acquisition people. I'd have some hyper awesome developers that can go in and do the work. I'd also be talking to the program offices. I'd be talking to community and to vendors and trying to figure out not just the one problem that we're trying to solve, but how like trying to figure out what other problems it will create if you spin it up without taking the other things into consideration, right?
Yeah, that's 100% the approach is what other problems might you create or what other problems aren't you thinking about along the way? Because you may not necessarily create the problem, but you may not, but not by not solving these other problems, you may not actually give the final product. There's that uns as a customer coming to the table, they're going to ask their question. Hey, I need to solve X. Great. And you can go in, you know, you have the agile stuff, you have all the, you pick your framework for how you get all these requirements. You go through and you do the requirement session and you do all the things. And after the end of the day, you go, well, why didn't this come out in the requirement session that we had like 3 weeks ago? Well, it's because, well, I didn't really think that from the acquisition folks. Oh, right. I really didn't think about it that way because once again, insert statement about bias that I said earlier. They're biased in that curse of knowledge. They know what they know, and intrinsically to them, they are just going to be able to know that answer. But like you said, bringing the others to the table is really going to be helpful because without that, you're not truly going to understand the problem space, and you're not. And while you may have delivered, you can be very right and extremely wrong. All at the same time, right? You know, did we solve the problem that the customer brought to the table? Yes. However, no. You know, I technically answered your question, but that wasn't the answer that you were actually looking for. And that's really the understanding and the approach that I try to look at things is take a step back and going, is this truly going to answer what it is that they're actually looking for? Or is this technically just answering a requirements document? If it's just requiring some requirements document that you get, or you know, requirements tickets in because you know you're using, you know, your Kanban boards, your Agile boards, your Scrum boards, whatever boards you're going to be using for your project, that's not helpful. You got to take a step out and look at the real world. How is this actually going to work?
Great. What problem really needs to be solved? How is it going to work? And then also don't let an engineer be in charge of your UI. You
That's
know.
why I'm never charged of UI.
There you go.
I make it pragmatic and practical, not user friendly necessarily.
Right.
And I always tell everybody, hey, look, if you want me to design your UI, can I design a UI? Can I find some colors and mimic something? Sure, I could do that, but I'm not your person to do that. That side of my brain doesn't engage in the way that you would like for it to. No matter how much I would love for that to happen, that just doesn't work. So I go into those folks who are specialized in that area and say, "You are specialized in design skills and user flow and all of those things. Let's have that conversation."
Absolutely. Absolutely. How do you think, do you think that like having a very diverse background and diverse knowledge base helps with like, you know, with explaining, you know, like helps enhance, understanding of complex topics as you look at like interoperability between systems or, you know, model explainability or model, you know, and how can we, you know, tackle some of those really complex problems that we're sitting with, especially as you look about, look at like transparency into AI systems and the need to have a true understanding of how they're coming to the, you know, coming to the point of making decisions. Can it help there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because once again, that statement of you can be extremely specialized and you can answer one part of that, but recognizing that you've got to step out, and especially when you're talking about a system, I can answer a specific question for a specific set of person or couple of folks. But when you're looking at it from a system perspective, a holistic, I always like to take, like you said earlier, take a step back. What is it that we're actually solving? What is your actual question? I get asked that a lot. Hey, can we solve this? I'm like, it's not that I can't solve the thing as you're asking me to solve, but what is it that you're trying to solve? And don't tell me just this question. What is it that you're trying to do with the answer to that question? And it gets, well, I'm trying to make a document. Well, what is that document supposed to do? Oh, well, it's supposed to do this thing. Oh, well, it's that based on, and I said, okay, that's great, but who's going to eventually use it? And why, what are they going to do with it? Oh, well, they're going to do completely making this up here just because, they're going to write a new legislation. Okay, cool. That's awesome. So they're going to write a new legislation. So me telling you how to write something in acquisition and just answering that question might get you part of the way. So we're going back with our example of acquisition, might only get you part of the way. But what you're trying to drive towards is, I want to write something in legislation. So maybe we should look at this in a more holistic. Who else needs to be involved in this process? What are the other business processes that need to come to the table? Right? We've got to get ethics folks involved at this point. We've got to get the lawyers involved because, okay, cool. You're going to get step into their domain and you've got to put in recognition from a security because you got to put some guardrails around all of this stuff because now we've going to have, it's going to say all these things and someone could in some way, shape, or form poison the data and they can, add some stuff that eventually makes into the law. So how do you know that you're eventually not going to write something really horrible? And that's when I say, well, a couple of things. All of those things are good, but you can't move the human out of this loop. So humans have to be involved along the way. Without that generalization of understanding that you have all of these players involved and the steps that you may need across the table, you're going to miss out on the what you were trying to do. Your value delivery will only exponentially increase once you get into that more of a generalistic view of what else should you have taken place. And when, like we said, not to detract from having a specialization. I have both a generalistic and an extreme depth. That desire for knowledge and learning is going to continue to be there. So probably more of an anomaly than the norm here. But from a
Absolutely.
generalistic perspective, having that view will make a significant difference.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that it's like it's the most important thing. Like I think be like being well spoken and highly knowledgeable in a whole lot of areas is like fun. Like that's what I do for entertainment is read and like learn. And it's why I part of why I started this podcast was to learn more about, you know, cutting edge technology and AI specifically. And you know, and so just out of curiosity, have you like are you where are you going next, man? Are you gonna start messing around with quantum now? It's like
Um,
is that your next thing there?
I'm going to be both messing around with it and not messing around with it all at the same time.
There you go. That's
Thank
a
you for appreciating that joke.
fantastic, fantastic joke.
I say that sometimes in meetings, and I either get the groans from folks who understand the joke. So maybe one person out of a meeting will get the joke, and the rest of the room goes silent, going, "Okay, what? I don't understand what you just said. I'm just going to move right past you on this conversation." So thank you for humoring me there.
Of course, man. Great one.
In terms of the quantum space, pun somewhat intended there. It's there. What I want to make sure is it doesn't go the way of the blockchain or RPA or insert new flash flavor technology thing. It's not. The technology's there. The question here is quantum brought down to the consumer level? And the answer is no, right? We haven't gotten there. Not every organization has access to quantum computing. That's one. And two, Nick, I would say we would all love to have I can't remember the name of the car, but there was some car that they put in the desert that was able to go really stupid fast and break, all sorts of records and go for the fastest car. And while I would love to say, yes, I want that car, man, I can't get past the fact that the traffic won't let me go, past so fast. One, two, safety, speed, all the things that kind of come with it. Just because you can get quantum doesn't mean one, everyone needs it.
Yes, that's true.
And I like to give these weird analogies because I want to make sure it's really well understood. You can't drive this really super fast car that's extremely specialized on every road because you have potholes. So how are you going to account for that? Right? That's one, you can't go that fast. Two, you have noise complaints. So in that perspective, does everyone have the power requirements to run their own quantum computing facility? Does
No.
everyone have the money to outlay for that entire quantum computing thing? Or would you likely leverage quantum computing because you have a specific need from a really highly specialized set of computations that need to be done? And the answer is probably you'd offload that, you'd build out your needs, and you'd offload that to some vendor who says, "Hey, I've got this really cool thing. National Lab X, please deploy deploy my workload into it and give me an answer." Right? I'm sure they'll, one, happily take your money, and two, from in the name of science, run that process. Are we there yet on the quantum computing to that level where everyone's using it? No. Will we be there where everyone's using it? Also no. Right? Can't just because we have all these really fast cars, everyone's not driving a super fast car. We're leveraging things where it makes sense, the right tool for the right purpose. And would I get more into the quantum computing space? Absolutely. It's intrigued me recently about quantum computing and cracking some encryption codes just because I'm curious. I haven't been curious enough yet to go beyond the "that's really interesting" and just theorizing on it. I'm sure once I get the itch. And the itch usually comes around where I wake up sometimes at 2, 3 in the morning and I go, I can't fall back asleep. So what am I going to do? I'm just going to research something.
Absolutely.
And who knows? Maybe in the next couple of weeks when I wake up at 2, 3 in the morning and for some random night and I need to fall back asleep, I'll start researching more into quantum and I'll solve something.
As I understand it, one of the I find it fascinating, partially because it's like, I mean, like that is science fiction to me, right? Like computing on an atom, or is like, I mean, that's a, like I think about like people of the past. Like imagine being born in like 1910, and like to you, science fiction is going into space, and then like in your lifetime it happens, right? Like that's really, really cool. Like to me, like that kind of computing is science fiction. As I understand it from a friend, some friends that are experts, is that like one of the major roadblocks is that quantum computing is not programmable right now. You can only build it for one task. But I don't really know, like, and apparently, like the big thing we got to figure out how to crack is how to create like a programmable quantum computer, which is fascinating, right? But I
Yeah,
don't know.
they're built to accomplish tasks, and I think once we figure these things out, Once again, like I said, you have your workload that you're trying to compute. You pass it to somebody, and they're going to do it. How they do it, that's not material to you at this moment. But you're right in that we're going to have to solve some things. It's not, once again, it's not a service that you go to AWS and you click, and 3 clicks later you're running compute on Quantum for your entire stack. That's not a thing yet. We put that yet because I'm sure at some point in the future it's on the roadmap.
I
But we're
could
going to take a
also
while to
see
get
it
there.
working in parallel, right? Like where you have most of your stuff in the, in your regular AWS stack, and then you can like bring in quantum resources on an as needed basis. It's like I can see it going a lot of ways. I think it's just going to be really, I don't know. That's one of like the science fiction things that I like to think about sometimes. But it's also one of the areas where I feel like I'm not smart enough to really understand it yet. And there's not a lot of those for me.
Yeah, this is where you, and the reason for that is because what that's solving is big, massive computational questions, right? We're talking, when you're looking at weather prediction, every year you got the race for who's got the biggest, fastest supercomputer. And I still remember a long time ago, I won't say the years, when, a long time ago is relative now, but someone built clusters with PlayStations.
I
They
remember that.
built it. Yeah, and I was like, man, this is so cool. They built a PlayStation cluster. And you're like, this is cool. I could take this thing that's sitting here and build a cool cluster. And you started thinking about that and going, that sounds easier said than done. That is ridiculously hard, one. And two, what the workloads that they put into that were so specialized for the type of thing that they're wanting to compute, the data that they're computing, the question and the computation that they're running on that, it's extremely specialized. That's why, once again, weather, it will always chew as much data and compute resources that you can give it. And as I always tell folks, it's still a prediction. It's still a guess. It's never an exact science because you're running different mathematical formulas to compute, what the patterns will be. And will quantum help us in that space at some point? Absolutely. It will continue to be not just there, but in multiple places. So to your question as to science fiction, yeah, you're right, because you and I aren't using those big, massive, clusters of, and I brought the PlayStation up because you have access to PlayStation. You could, in theory, buy 1,000 PlayStations. I mean, you'd be
I
insane.
mean,
You'd be insane to potentially
I like five, man. I don't know what kind of budget you have for PlayStations,
I
Gary.
mean, we're gonna go old school and build it, throw a LAN party, right?
Oh yeah, there we go. I mean that. Listen, I'm down for that. Let's throw a LAN party with 1,000 PlayStations. I mean that. Yeah, that'll be fun. But like,
We'll have to rent out a convention center to make that work.
yeah. For sure. Listen, I think Sony should put some money behind this. This sounds like an awesome event for them to be marketing at. Just saying, Sony, if you're listening, let me know. We got you.
We'll happily participate, and we'll host the event for you as long as you do all the work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Or, pay us too, then I got somebody. I know a guy that can do that for enough money. So but yeah, man, this is like as you say here, I think like we're at a really interesting time as you look at AI and AI development. I think we've like it's been like I think things have really, really, really sped up and continued to. But I also don't know how much more performance you can get out of the transformer models where we are. I feel like they're doing a lot of fine-tuning now. Where do you think like this is going to end up? Like, where do you think we're going? Is it they going to be a new model fundamentally, like, or
So let's take a step back and kind of look at where we were to where we are in this whole AI landscape, right? I almost said 1994, but 2014, we're in 2025. So 2014 is, like I said, when I got into this. And OpenAI had different things on their website at that time. Right. That's where I started lurking, learning. It was lurking on their website and learning from the stuff that they would post on there. about various things on AI. And so I learned from the OpenAI's website, and that's kind of where I started. And now when you go to the OpenAI website, it's a little different. It's all about ChatGPT and the model. So to your question, do we expect that there's going to be someone? Of course, there's going to be tons of innovation. Are we going to hit some plateaus along the way? Sure. After a while, you can only do but so much with certain knowledge that you've brought into the space, and then you've got to ha and then I'm sure you're going to have another disruptor that's going to come in, right? Someone else is going to figure something in a different, new and novel way that we're all going to go, oh my God, I can't believe we didn't think about it this way before. And you're off to the races again. Now to your question, with the reasoning, it's not reasoning. With the ability to do that recall, it's really good at doing the recall, and it's really good at understanding the context of your question. Are the models going to continue to improve? Absolutely. Are we going to be able to find better ways to fine-tune those models and speed up that process and shorten the timeline to do that? Absolutely. Are we going to come up with a better model at some point? Absolutely. Do I think it's going to replace all of us? Absolutely not. Is it? And but that said, and I think I did this. I did a video on this pre-pandemic, I believe, where and it's very applicable today. Automation, it's going to happen. Is AI going to increase the automation that's out there? Absolutely. Is it going to do some replacement of jobs? Absolutely. We'd be fools not to think about the reality of tech innovation in the industry, right? When you look back at the Industrial Revolution, that was a major, and folks think technology and they only think computers and stuff like that. Technology is more than that, right? Look at the technology that goes be I still look at a Slinky and go, man, how did someone come up with this? Right? Because you look at it and go, oh, what are you talking about? Technology and a Slinky? Slinky has a lot of technology that went into it. Somebody make that. Now it's like, okay, cool, it's a Slinky. But you look at it and go, it's a spring. Okay, well, cool. Well, how do you get the spring to come back, but yet do all the cool things that it does? You got to look at the tensile strength. You got to be able to come back and hold its shape. It's got to be able to do all these things. That's a technology advancement that took place. Now, I recognize that has nothing to do with replacing someone, but I'm putting that out there. When you look at the Industrial Revolution that took place along the way, that technology changed things. You had factory automations that came along the way. When Ford decided, hey, I can build a car, or I can build a car and change things up a little bit, right? And you start looking at factory automations. Did it get rid of some jobs? It absolutely did. You put robots in place that it can do highly specialized welding of a, but in an extremely repeatable manner and move really heavy objects really quickly and do that. After a while, that's going to happen. Is AI going to replace several jobs? Yes. I would be remiss to not at least say that warning that it will. But I also like to put the statement that it goes back to we have to be humans and recognize that that is going to happen. And we have to be ready and unwilling and understanding of how to train the next generation to figure out what is the next thing we should start focusing our attention on. Right. Once we no longer started looking at the automation of the assembly line and building cars, one, unfortunately, we kind of forgot those people and industry just left them,
Well,
which is sad.
the industry was sent overseas, let's be clear. Industry
Well,
was outsourced.
the industry became outsourced, and that's correct. But as a whole, though, those folks were just left behind,
Yes, they were.
right?
I mean,
And we
look at
left
how things
entire
have become.
communities behind.
Look at Detroit, right? Like Detroit used to
Yes.
be one of the most affluent cities in the country, and it is now not.
Correct. And that's sad. And as a human, that should not, I feel that we should do better. And that's not a let's have government solve all our problems. That's not an industry solve all our problems. It's a we are, as humans, should try to figure out ways collectively to solve that problem. And recognizing when there's a giant shift in how things are going to take place, we must be better at anticipating that shift and doing something about it in an early manner that would then find a way to, one, remember these are humans. They deserve our respect, and we should demand better of ourselves to be respectful of them, to recognize you can't just go, oh, I'll just go to some university and take on new training and learn something new to, and the person who's sitting there looking at you going, well, I'm 63 years old. And at what point in that will I be able to gain any meaningful semblance of my life back? Right? You got to be cognizant of that reality. And that's the challenge here. And I'm not saying I have an answer for this problem, but the AI, will it disrupt it? Where do I see things going? And I know this kind of ties back to that, is we will automate many things. Folks will lose jobs. What I would say is we've got to leverage the tools that are available to us to figure out what's next and start anticipating that and recognizing this goes back to your question at the start of this. Should you be so specialized to the point you don't know what's beyond you? No. No. Should you stick in a career field without paying attention to what's happening? No. You should. People usually stick with one career, and I'd say most po folks only have one career their entire life. In a conversation with my wife, who said, I've had like three or four different careers in my life. And that's because I choose to remake what I do and what I am, and that's a desire to push that. But we don't teach that, right? We don't advocate for folks to start thinking about, well, yes, I know you love doing X, but what happens if or when that is either A, no longer needed, B, becomes automated and you have and they need less of it, or C, they find something better in innovation to the point where there's a younger generation that just completely can do your job in 5 seconds and you have no idea what's going on. So we've got to be better where so I see that companies are going to continue to do things, build those better models, replace workers, unfortunately. You've seen the headlines where CEOs are saying we're going to replace all of our tech stack and all of our developers, and they probably, that's wonderful, lofty statements, but the reality is you can't replace all of your developers. Somebody at least has to say, please build something. So, at least you have one developer doing it at a minimum. But in reality, you can't just replace all your developers. So your developers have to change what they were doing, right? As a developer, simple basic things like writing some functions to make a query to your database. Simple queries, you no longer need to remember every single thing. Could you leverage an LLM to write a query for you? Absolutely. Absolutely. They're great at that. A lot of these newer LLMs have been coded in such a way. So we have to think ahead. Well, how do you then take that to spearhead a much better developer? One. And two, what else should you be starting to focus on? Because there are things that the LLMs can never do that we as humans can. And we have to start focusing in that area. So back to your question, where do I see this going? And do I see those new models coming out? Absolutely, but it's not a technology problem. It's still a human challenge, right? The conversation, the reason I reference this back is the same statement I made back then, the same statement I'll make again today. This has nothing to do with technology. It has everything to do with humans, right?
Absolutely.
We've got to remember we're still humans, and we've got to, our fellow human, we've got to respect them enough to understand that I'm building something that's going to eventually affect your life. How do I then do the other thing to help you? Think of the what's next so that way there's an easily glide path and transition to the other thing.
No, I love it, man. I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of industries out there. I mean, you look like the coal mining industry, right? Like, I mean, they hit their employment peak in like the 1910s or something. And it's also not a fuel that we should really be burning from an energy density perspective. It's just like it's not great. It's an old tech, right? And like the Industrial Revolution ran on coal, but we don't anymore. Well, we still a little bit, but I'm with you. Like, let's look forward and let's try to like understand that these are absolutely going to impact people and affect people. Story that I like to tell is something that I find really interesting is that Before everybody had a freezer in their home, we all had ice boxes, right? And you actually had to physically put ice in there. And there was a whole industry all over that would go harvest ice from like the Great Lakes and deliver it and like store it and then deliver it to to wherever your home was. And in when in-home freezers started becoming a thing, like they actually took out ads in local papers and in the papers saying that organic ice is better for you, or natural ice is better for you than ice made in your home. And now we it's not even something that we would even think about. Is like, what do you mean? Like, we shouldn't have the ice from the ice machine in the house or in the ice trays. Like, it's not. And so I think that I mean, it's not the greatest example, but that's a technological innovation completely wiping out an industry, and I think it's going to continue to happen. But you're gonna people are gonna lose jobs. That's absolutely the case. But I'm with you. Like, let's find a way to give people the opportunity to go out and remake themselves and help them understand that that's not the end of the world. But like, beyond an opportunity, that's it. I think everybody, I believe in equity of opportunity. I don't believe in equity of results.
It's you're correct. You can provide the opportunity. That doesn't mean that everyone in that entire group is going to achieve the exact same result, and that's okay. We are, once again, back to that statement. We're humans, driven by different things, driven by different desires, different want, different needs. There are folks who have wants and needs and desires for different reasons, and their motivations are different for whatever assorted reasons. I never want to be seen as some elitist who doesn't recognize the realities around, nor someone who just says, "All right, we'll just give everybody everything and that's it," and that solves nothing. There's got to be a balance to the process. But like I said, like you just said, I'm sorry. Provide the opportunity. Recognize that you've got to figure out ways to provide that opportunity for folks and figure it out.
Yeah, I love it, man. Daria, this has been great. I really appreciate you coming on. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we conclude?
I think this is one of those where it harpens back to some of the how did I learn and what do we teach and what do we not teach. I think make sure that your kids, and I know this, I've got a relatively younger kid who's in middle school in 8th grade now, and one of the things I tried telling her when we do her homework, when she says, "Hey, well, this isn't how the teacher is teaching X or Y or Z," I said, "That's great. What I'm helping you understand is there are multiple ways to solve the problem. That's one. And two, what I'm trying to teach you is process for how to think about solving a problem, not the actual solution." And so what we need to be better at with our next generations collectively, because it can't just be one, you have to start looking at thinking differently and recognizing how to understand the problem space better, right? Are we going to be successful where every single person is going to do that? Absolutely not. And once again, state C statement, we're not all built the same, and that's okay. We celebrate our differences in that, and everyone's going to bring something different to the table, and that's what we want. But we still need to start thinking differently about the problem space, because that's the only way we're going to get better.
Completely agree with you, man. Derry, thank you so much for joining Robots and Red Tape. This has been fun.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
Everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you're having a great day.